these chats that are supposed to start have 3 hours in the room. What he saw, vision of Krishna, vision of Verity, from Kanasa, and how the third raised by the Buddhist Maharaj, by the Pandavas, the Adis, and the followers of the Buddhist Maharaj. Protected by the Indian expert scholars, protected. So, that's it. In that topic, understand the qualities, characteristics, very important because we can see one how pretty narrow our eyes played and body. We can see the full adherence to the Vedic culture that was there by pretty narrow our eyes forefathers. Their conception is done in such a way as to be most purified services, such a website. We can also have some qualities of Yudhisthira Maharaj that Yudhisthira Maharaj follow footsteps of the great kings. All of the kings on with heritage. But we can list characteristics of Yudhisthira Maharaj by the leader. Another very important thing that he has described here. One of the main causes of Yudhisthira Maharaj gave fire such an age. One of the main causes in essence, describing it with qualities of Yudhisthira Maharaj. Helps us to see that the other person is qualified for this celebrated position.
In a Melbourne rain, I had to stop on, off, on,
yeah,
but the pattern is not.
To me, that's the number one. I just thought it would be they allowed to duplicate for the research. So she said that her grandpa was a priest, so her brother would be a priest. Not the father, one generation.
That was only because
just happened like
that. He was driven.
I just need to say that for like the completely obvious question. Maharaja Yudhishthira knew the science of Krishna very well, for it is stated here that by continuous cultivation of this science, or by continuous devotional service to Lord Krishna, he acquired the qualification of administering the state. Some procedure. He was doing bhakti yoga, for which he got the knowledge of the prayer, which is a material body. Administering the state of faith to
the science of Krishna.
He probably 7 days to prepare himself to be there.
and he wanted to probably utilize that time association for Superdad for his time. But then you go to your question, you know, what is the fear of the amount of time, knowing that Kali Yuga, where is it with the previous? What is the first sign of the age of Kali had arrived?
This is a quick
data. Deep in the age of the Brahmana community. Right? So that's, fits into this question, is that Kali Yuga raises the Brahmana community. Everything becomes successfully created. And it creates the contaminated in that, which there's a lot of suffering. Because people who died in Kali Yuga are those who will suffer a lot as a result of previous simple activities, and Maharaj, written from the Sri Maharaj, who wanted to hear that certain people who were destined to suffer, would suffer, and of course, by interfering with that, put something in jar books. There's those people made in jar books that in jail their criminal mentality, antisocial behavior may increase, so that the prison system may put them into more secure and more punishment, less facilities. So someone may say, trying to clear why people are such subcondition. So sense cut like that. Prison or place further punishment, partial correction, like that. Not interfering because that whole system is set up by the managers of the universe. It's a management system set in place. So then the question is, are we the system set in place? No, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is set up the management system. So in this period of time, we allow some great concessions. So it's sort of like the king can personally come and say, okay, this is the system that I'm personally offering. No one else can come and say, the king did it, I'll come to do it myself. So, didn't feel that he had the authority to set up this man. No one can instruct him that way. That's what the Prabhupada indicates with that from state instruction.
Prabhupada says, I consider it Perfect management is then spring loaded to satisfy my service in upward sense will be progress, sitting in the store, taking care of the medical
method. It is that price will be very good.
So then, Sri Maharaj tells Sri Goswami to do the 12 gears of Bhagavad Gita to protect how is it all rectified on the army basis? And therefore the managers representing the Lord need to understand who is punishing people officially. At the same time, that is passionate about the spiritual conditions. It's quite a therefore, unless something is sanctioned by the Lord, see this very difficult to be understood. It sometimes appears that devotees are against charity or against helping people, we just want to chant Hare Krishna 3, and of course, we don't want to help people. Our point is all facilities are made to help. All facilities are made to help people. Hospitals, education, something that people can do to teach people how to do. But the devotee knows that unless it is sanctioned by the Lord, you cannot help them. They can perceive, they can, the devotee will understand that despite all facility, this person. The Lord wants this person to suffer, by the Lord, so that this person is to suffer. Anyway, she started off collecting charity, distributing locally, and gradually, then she started distributing overseas. Gradually, people all over the world seeing this faith charity. And so much so, first started storing in the home, then she started storing it and school time. So it ended up, she's got 200 tons. So there's this little lady, about 60 years old. Couple of stragglers that come in, once a week and help her out. She's got 200 tons of furniture, dinner, a lot of it sitting outside, packed, sent it, stored, and the council was coming, because, and then this decided that it was all going to the rubbish. So, you can see that if Krishna doesn't sanction that, yes, I empower you to help your friends, to help others, one is not empowered, you will just end up a disaster. So, all of those people who gave charity to unworthy people, unworthy times, all ended up in the pit because it wasn't sanctioned by Krishna. Although, a little help for some people, they got a lot of
eat the inheritance of God. Now, without the sanction of the Lord, even though the money is there, there's 200 tons worth of stuff there. But without the Lord's direction, it's just useless. Big hospitals, education systems, it's like big population, big education system. We lie on the street and won't work. So, important point. Those who represent Krishna need to understand. One, we have to cater to the need. Represent the Lord. Do you want to? Everyone gets facilities for their allotment and opportunity trying to go back to Godhead. But if their last rules are unreachable, the Lord deserves the right to be able to understand. Yes. Someone who is very pensive. Desire for mercy is a specific patient. So, actually, it's a rascal. And I've got a very passionate way to do it. It's fun to do. So, what has to be happening? And that is part of the quality. We're going to get the big ones. Okay, so, thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac nation evolve, the air current undo will then be with the exact light powers of the earth. Then there's a long report on astrological calculations that are made to help this wonderful miracle in the value of astrology. Because if anyone reads that purple there, then James. Astronomical calculations of stellar influences upon a living being are not a supposition but a factual truth. If the Lord made you so subtle, the living part of their body is influenced by the respective star. The living being obtains its working body to fulfill his terms of imprisonment by the manipulation of such astronomical inputs. Not unfruitful, or even the personality of Godhead appears in certain constellations with stars, and thus the influence is exerted upon the body, thus born at an auspicious moment. So here he's actually relating astrology to the Lord and the Lord.
is anywhere in this third world, that goodness of when it is something that has no value. Prabhupada did make a statement, which is the only statement that Lord has ever quoted, and that is that Prabhupada did say that there is what the Lord is that is to come. And it's a fact that the way that astrology is used these days, most people so little understand astrology, in fact, Aristotle used to tell us unless you know the world, you cannot be. You cannot teach astrology to someone who doesn't know. You cannot teach it to someone who doesn't know. Samskaras of the school of Sanatana Dharma, man eternal. There's not talk about Kama Kanda, are highly suitable for creating an atmosphere for taking advantage of true stellar influences. Talk about practice, David Sanatana Dharma. He's saying that they actually, those samskaras are highly suited, very much recommended. And therefore, Gavada and samskara, or the first seed in the purification process described by the high caste, is the beginning of all pious acts to receive a good, pious, and intelligent class of men in human society. So, astrology is open work in a couple of books. One is that after the event takes place, you look at the astrological implications, and you see, oh, this is the astrological influence, the stellar influence at that time, and astrology is based upon the principle. The moment of the event begins, carries the nature characteristics of that life, which is by the
Therefore, since astrology has that nature, why not choose an astrological chart that you know is auspicious and to be something like that? So therefore, Prabhupada says, in relation to the gardens, that they're highly suitable for creating an atmosphere for taking advantage of yourself. So here, if a Vaishnava wants to have a tall, elevated soul to make a divine conception, then they will choose a very auspicious moment for study. And they will then, that moment is unadvantageous. That's a moment when a really elevated soul. They will not choose other times where demons that are entering, they're about to take birth. Other people, they don't know the cell input. Choose those times, and then so you can actually pick a time, like sanctity, yes. Right? You know, you get out there with your books, and you know, according to the time and place, you're going to maximize your sales. If you get there as well. So, most places have been done, but in this place, where people isn't something that they've they're all walking past with lots of people, but they can't get to the far past. And it's somewhere where I can stop, set up a big candle, and pull the crowd, like in front, because, the sidewalk is just wide enough, not too wide, I'll get one person to come over, I wouldn't even try and stop. When you've got one person there, someone comes, has a look, then I talk to them. Well, so I actually have a common foot post. You get two people, then other people two people. But then others will come. So then gradually, once you get three or four, a big crowd comes. Once you get a crowd, it must tell you this. And I say, shout, pass yourself. No, I can't get up. But time by circumstance. He can choose. He can choose. And the bird is like that. So Vaishnavas, they understand how things work. So therefore, the time of day, they're trying to see, the astrological influences, and then they make it even more auspicious. So she has to do that. But in many ways, the beautiful things, the astrological things, work out. I'll give you another example. When I was at the farm, when I did get this, so I had to get there. Are you sure? I just have maybe a couple of devotees, right? A couple of devotees, and the rest will literally put a sign sometimes up on the thing. You know, free will.
So then I've got people who, you know, never picked up the mic. And I want them to cut up a sack of potatoes or a couple without 50 pounds. And then I've other people who, you know, I've grown beef, so people come at all, things that most of them are and then so what I used to do, why did they want to help me? Because they wanted a free ticket to the concert. So what they wanted to do was to go and see the baby. So I used to work out the astrological influences for the whole day. And for 3 days, I worked at 2 minutes. And I worked out the 5 problems. So I might say 2, 3, 6, 7. So I would let my staff go knowing that they could want to come. I'd say to them, give me back here by 3:45. On the opportunity. Because I'd say to them, 10:45, whatever, blood into this tent. We'd have it. And they'd come back at that time because they had to come out. But although it was quiet for that whole interim, that exact time, anyone in the concert was hungry, and, you know, what happened? Most of the other stores, they weren't ready. You have a roll for a couple of hours, right? And then they're just spacing out. Oh my God. What happened suddenly, right? People don't know what to do. Everyone's hungry. They go, that was the beautiful thing. Fantastic. That way, I was able to use it. I was kind of using the people quotes. Something like that. Astrology, there's only that one quote of quote. And all this bird quote, let's skip that one. As a whole, good book there. So, by the way, even in relation to spring board and all that. So, and, you know, the Michael Institute, they did put in here that there's something that goes to the topic of discussions for using astrology. Present the value of aiding astronomical calculations in the life of modern Western audience as well, but also any questions in that's not unusual. See, the Shiva Bhakti Siddhanta says, he were, you know, literally do all these calculations, and then he's got a complete understanding. The same way, it describes somewhere in here how it was understood, the Maharaj Yudhisthira was there to be the hero of Bhagavata. In that same birth word, describes there that a proper place and time is selected to receive a respectable personage. So also to receive Maharaj Parikshit, a suitable moment is chosen when all good stars assemble together to exert their influence. So here's another way that if a great personality is arriving, you create the nicest atmosphere. One way of doing that is by the astrological indications. You can see that, yes, this is a nice spot. And that's
Thus he took his birth just to be known as the great hero of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This suitable arrangement of astral influences will never create man's will, but is the arrangement of superior management of the agency of the Supreme. So, it does go on to describe there that, it's an, here he's saying that this arrangement is an arrangement of the superior management agency of the Supreme. That's the I began to show you when I was 15. The reason I took it is because I was sitting with a friend looking at the astrological effect in paper. It was occurred to me, I did not know that, but it occurred to me that the astrology's work is proving to God. No way, astrology cannot same as karma. So we accept the principle of karma as astrology, right? Yes. You have to accept it. So I took up astrology to prove or disprove the existence of God. And to me, it always proved it. And here, it is about the same thing, but the arrangement of the earth is the suitable arrangement of astral influences. It's the superior management of the agency of the Supreme. It's directly related to the management system. When that management system is used, this universe is managed to punish the living entities, and this universe is also used to accommodate the great devotees, managed by us with fear, to recognize the book up part of the just like our marriage. We don't just invite the non-devotees to the temple. We also invite the sannyasis to purify. So we're not just accommodating to rectify consciousness, we're also accommodating to correct consciousness. Even though the temple is a place to rectify consciousness, if we do that, we also have to accommodate to that side. The management system of the universe is that. And the astrological indication of influence is part of that action. So this will tie in part of the Lord's management system to God's disregard for the way that we drop. The whole management system is for the devotees and some of that faith for the people. Devotee, someone who grieves, in charge, walks around, thinks about God, is done this in that character. It's like, So astrology is exactly like that.
why the we say that actually any knowledge is the knowledge about the love itself.
Thank you.
have a slight minimum difference. One of the things we should be very careful of is calibrated. Everything in calibrated is good. Sorry. Astrology, Prabhupada makes a statement. He says that there's the most. Man's destiny is therefore ascertained by the birth time, constellation of stars, and a factual horoscope is made by the learned astrologer. It is a great science, and misuse of the science does not make it useless. Very important point. It is such a misused science, but it doesn't make the science itself useless. You will find that 99% and therefore, just like Prabhupada was very hesitant to read Western medicine, but also, I mean, I could think of it. You know, in some cases, he mentions homeopathy as, you know, the bona fide. In other places, it's dangerous. You have to understand it's because, you know, these sciences are just in the hands of people who have no understanding what they're doing. Our part is really trying to discourage them from getting into the thing, you know, which can really cause war. So he can sometimes just say, hey, can quit stuff. But, it's not that these sciences have no go to the most important shit in this world, but they're not even in this world, they're leaving now. Yeah. The safest path is to primarily transfer a Christian hope. All the things that we know the Prabhupada is handed in, so depend on that, that's number one. These other things, okay, they're the bona fide sciences, but who is handed in the whole necessary. So, most readers get the point. The other thing is that one. I get so many calls from people wanting to drag it, and they ring up and say, I want to drag you on this part. So I say, what is that? It's out of the know. That's it. So, you bring up in here to get your, you know, astrological information, that's the best. So, your astrologers, one day behind you. Clear it. So, we have a policy. They'll have it the next
day.
That's what I said. They're further research. So they get the ticket first. But I have a card in their water. Sattva can come side to side, but I say it's what titi is there at sunrise, and sometimes titi is start to start with, but at sunrise, they may catch the last part of the titi, there, and then, you know, in Melbourne when it comes, that titi will change. So sometimes we jump at titi. Sometimes they have a titi. Titi is a moon cycle of the moon. 15 days, titi twice, or half the new moon, full moon, and then good one. So, therefore, the astrologers have selected a whole day out calculation. Many times, people ring me up and say, I want to do this ceremony on the road, or I can't do it. And I say, well, you missed it. it's the next day. See? And they tell me, no, we did this on this day. And I say, well, that day was auspicious. That sort of thing is just the majority of what people are doing. That is the majority of people. People better do it.
What do you do with
the other thing, of course, is that generally the rituals described here are so versed in astrology and under their knowledge that they place all emphasis on that. That's where their knowledge is, and no emphasis at all on the devotional aspect of the ceremony, on pleasing the Lord. In other words, the rituals were quite often, you know, they may perfectly select the day, the time, be able to set up all the paraphernalia and all the mantras, and they could get one who is God, not even mentioned. Therefore, we see an over-dependence on the teacher. You're better off to do this. Many of the commentators, they bring India a bit of play, they have no time to write play. They come along, they want to do the ceremony, and princes like the people, they would say, we don't need to do any of the prayers, the mantras, just cut the cake. So to them, it's for a haircut, which is of course, there's not even a skeleton of information and understanding of the whole process of the samskara,
And then they've got to prepare the skit.
you need to get the side grass, but really, by that time we actually get the value there. So, I had a presentation for the student activities for every class, depending upon how the students had studied and how we got through the class, it was time. We sometimes do this quite far off. So, any questions or anything? Just while we discuss types.
When does that start?
We're not sure about that, but hopefully we can start.
So, so that will give us, you know, perhaps 3-4 weeks to see what I was like. We've got one more class of Buddhism, which will actually be combined with the disability. So then, that's 2 weeks. Then there's the one year that what I have been actually in the last 2 years, I'm something that you said that they can start to complete. That is going to be the number 30. Nothing for him to do with that. Say, you know, even on that day, is that which you take out of the box? Which means that we can actually, you know, do something. So we can push it 7 times. 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, can we do the exam? Thank you. So that's another question. 27, we will finish off. 27, off. But no, it's quite possible to finish the first cancer, so we will get back the first week. So, that's enough. Means that next week we can stop doing the COVID-19 discussion. I think as the comes back, we need to see we're in the same thing. Is that from? We'll try and finish up by the first week of December.
It says that King Yudhisthira, being very satisfied with the birth of King Parikit, had the purificatory process of birth performed. Because he had learned of Brahmanas headed by Daumya and Kripa. He opens the purport saying there's a need for good and intelligent class of Brahmanas who expert in performing these purificatory processes, the samskaras. And later on he describes, because of Kali Yuga, it's not possible to actually revive the Vedic process, and therefore the Pancharatrika system is recommended. And very important statement, he says, such purificatory processes is allowed only for spiritual upliftment and not for any other purpose. So again, you know, you will get in ISKCON the same sort of sometimes not fully educated statements about samskaras, that, you know, all we need to do is chant Hare Krishna. You know, why perform these? But as Prabhupada mentions in the previous verse, that the samskaras of the school of Sanatan Dham are highly suitable. And here, those samskaras of Sanatan Dham in Kali Yuga are from the Pancharatrika process, not the Vedic system. Because we can't revive the Vedic system. So this is important, because sometimes people quote that in Kali Yuga we can't revive the Vedic system. So therefore, anything that's not chanting Hare Krishna, oh, that's part of the Vedic system. But Prabhupada's not saying that. He's there's another system for the Kali Yuga, and that's the Pancharatrika system. So it's not that we just chant Hare Krishna and anything else in the Vedas, oh, we can't revive that in Kali Yuga. Oh, we can, some things. Another lecture I heard Srila Prabhupada said, he said, someone asked about samskaras and what have you, and Srila Prabhupada says, yes, we do the minimum required. So it's not that we do nothing, we do the minimum. It's Kali Yuga. You can't do much more than the minimum, but we shouldn't neglect it and just leave it all out. So that goes along. So and people say, oh, you know, we're not into these Vedic, you know, Varnashram sort of samskaras, this, that and the other. They're referring to a whole different system which is certainly impossible to revive in Kali Yuga. But there is a similar system which is especially meant for Kali Yuga, which is the Pancharatrika system, which we actually do follow. In fact, the whole initiation process is one of the samskaras of the Pancharatrika system. Saying, oh, you know, that's Vedic, you know, we don't follow the Varnashram Vedic system, so therefore let's not get initiated. But we do get initiated. But our initiation is based upon the Pancharatrika system. Very, you know, so it is, it's Vedic, but it's Vedic for design, especially for Kali Yuga. So you can see how some statements are taken out of context. Papa goes on to mention in that purport. In Kali Yuga, of course, he says that. He's talking about the Pancharatrika system. It acts on the sudra class of men, supposedly the population in Kali Yuga. Right. Such a purificatory process is allowed only for spiritual upliftment and not for any other purpose. So this is an important point for devotees, that yes, we do perform many aspects of the Varnashram system, not strictly according to the Vedic process, but the Pancharatrika system. But even in doing that, we have to just dovetail it for some direct spiritual benefit. We cannot, you know, implement a slow, you know, getting people to perform these ceremonies or follow any sort of Vedic things for a slow progression, you know, that's not going to happen in Kali Yuga. Unless there's just some powerful spiritual input in everything we do, it will have very little effect in Kali Yuga. And therefore, the Pancharatrika system is designed for that purpose. And that's what gives it the potency. It's strong concentration on, you know, a spiritual goal straight away. Like that. So for the purpose of spiritual upliftment in this fallen age, the ghost families prefer the purificatory process under the Pancharatrika formulas to the Vedic rites. Why is wealth distributed to the Brahmanas? Yes, they give the highest quality of service in regard to the prime necessity of life, that's right. So wealth is distributed to them. And how does the distribution of wealth help that process? Just to expand on that same answer.
So they don't have to worry about their material needs?
Yes. So that's right. They can just focus on, they're giving the highest benefit to human society. So give the Brahmanas 100% of their time, since they're given the most benefit. You know, you know, you know, everyone knows that if you're running a business or, you know, even, you know, in temple management, what have you, if you've got your best men or women, you know, you don't leave them unengaged or doing things that, you know, only a very qualified person can do. You know. Bad management policy. Usually the most difficult tasks can only be performed by the most qualified. And the most difficult and the most beneficial should be performed by the most qualified. Because then, you know, then there'll be success in the most important, most beneficial, most difficult. If you have those jobs and you allow your most qualified there doing some service way beneath their level of knowledge and ability, you've wasted that talent, that asset, and you're engaging others in that service and there's no proper result. So, you know, so give the brahmanas facility, let them do the best work for society. And then Prabhupada mentions, you know, charity, it was offered to persons who deserve to accept charity by dint of spiritual enlightenment. So even amongst brahmanas and amongst the different ashrams, it is that quality. You know, generally we look at sudras, vaishyas, kshatriyas and brahmanas. If they're actually qualified, you should be seeing that they're also, say, their spiritual understanding of the self and of God to some degree should actually improve in those higher varnas. The lower varnas means that they're more covered by the lower modes of nature, which means that their spiritual knowledge and qualities are more covered over. As you come to the level of a brahmana, that means that you're less covered and more able to perceive the spirit soul and the supreme soul. And the other point, of course, another reason is that, you know, a wretched person who's not spiritually qualified cannot use wealth. Prabhupada makes that point there. If you give wealth to a brahmana, they can perform a very valuable service and they can also utilize that wealth properly. You give wealth to a wretched person, they still can't perform, you know, the valuable service, and they'll misuse the wealth. It will do them and everyone else harm. You know, so that's another reason why we should just, you know, you give an alcoholic money, you know, what are they going to do? Straight to the pub. It's interesting in the Mahabharata that there's a statement here that the sages who attended the birth ceremony of Parikshit Maharaj received huge amounts of wealth, but they gave most of it away. They left for the mountains, their minds set on ascetic practices. You know, and of course we'll see later in this chapter how Yudhisthira Maharaj, you know, went to where King Marut left, you know, massive amounts of gold from a previous era. But although that gold was there, people in the Vedic societies were not really inclined to go and get it and, you know, become big capitalists and, you know, what have you. They just left it there. They were dissatisfied. Here the brahmanas, you give them wealth, they're not greedy persons, you know, looking for any sort of profit to increase their sense gratification. You know, you give them wealth and they'll take what they need for their service, they'll just leave the rest. Yep.
You know, in the text in
yes.
So after the Gargadhan purification process,
yes.
There are some other samskaras. Are these part of the Pancharatna?
Yeah, yeah. All those, they're all mentioned. I think we call Rupa Goswami the Rasacharya, and Gopala Bhatta Goswami is called the Smritacharya.
Yeah,
that's Sakriya Saradipika, yeah. Gopala Bhatta Goswami has compiled the Sakriya Saradipika, and what he's done is for the Pancharatrika system. He's taken all the Vedic processes, and where there are particular demigods who are worshipped, which is not out of the question in certain circumstances, in certain where it's not needed, he has put in the worship of various Vaishnavas or Vaishnava deities. And he has, you know, reduced the intricacy of the ceremonies to the absolute minimum, and you know, so that it's always, you know, the minimum is done, and then you know, there's the chanting and feasting and distribution of wealth to the Brahmanas and what have you. So he's sort of made it nice and compact for Kali Yuga, and even then, you know, we can reduce that down to almost nothing if the circumstances are there. For instance, I sometimes get people, and I can see that they're in a big hurry, they want a certain ceremony, and you know, I may do a 1 hour ceremony in 10 minutes, in which case I will cut everything down. You know, I'm following Sakriya Saradipika. That means the order of things and you know, essential things, and you know, I make sure that they've chanted the holy name, taken prasadam, bowed down before the deities, and a couple of certain mantras are done for the actual ceremony. So it's followed Sakriya Saradipika, Gopala Bhatta Goswami. That's done. Yeah.
Thank you.
And. So it can be reduced. So yes, that Gopala Bhatta Goswami, Sanatana Goswami also, you know, in his Hari Bhakti Vilas, I've seen that in the bookshop. You know, there's about. You know, I have them at home. I've read a couple of verses. These days, I read the whole lot. But of course, all those details, where do we find them? Where do we find the information from what other source of Hari Bhakti Vilas by Sanatana Goswami? Nectar Devotion. It says that in the beginning of Nectar Devotion, right? That Rupa Goswami is just presenting the principles and all the details are mentioned by Sanatana Goswami in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. So. Alright, so as you can see, that answer, why is wealth distributed to the Brahmanas? There's probably, you know, a few sentences to really properly encapsulate that question. You know, I think if you just chose one of those sentences, that, you know, it's the sort of question that maybe, you know, 3 marks for, you know, so if it showed up in a test one day. Alright. Now, so we're moving on to a little bit of an understanding of, again, the this whole section is really bringing us back to the birth of Maharaj Parikit. Again, there's to discussing the actual birth, what Maharaj Parikit saw when he was in the room. And his birth is glorious, of course, because the Lord saved him. Right? But why did the Lord save him? Two reasons. He was spotless due to being a pure devotee of the Lord, yes. Yeah, the Lord wanted to continue the line of pious kings to rule over the earth as his representatives. Yeah. That's actually not the second reason. The first reason, yeah, that's part of it. Prabhupada, he starts off, the second reason is, and as you said, he was the only male surviving descendant of Puru, the pious forefather of the virtuous King Yudhisthira. So yeah, look. Yes. You know, the first reason is because he's a devotee himself. And because he's a devotee, he wants to save him because he wants to continue the line of his representative. Right? So that's sort of that first reason. He's a devotee. Why save a devotee? Because they're going to continue the line of representatives of the Lord. The second reason is that he's the only surviving male descendant of Puru, the pious forefather of the virtuous King Yudhisthira. So, it's sort of for Maharaj Yudhisthira in one sense, to save a bona fide servant of the Lord and descendant of another devotee. So we've already described he's a bona fide descendant of the Lord. Here, you know, he's the descendant of another devotee. Prabhupada explains a little bit more. The family in which a Mahabhagavat takes his birth is fortunate, because due to the birth of a first grade devotee, the members of the family. So he's talking about Maharaj Yudhisthira. So the members of Yudhisthira's family, past, present and future, after 100 generations, become liberated by the grace of the Lord out of respect for his beloved devotee. So he's sort of, you know, the main brunt of the second reason is out of respect for Maharaj Yudhisthira, you know, who's another devotee, that he wants to save. You know, it's a big thing. Here is the last descendant in Maharaj Yudhisthira's line, which is a big thing for a king in those days. Maharaj Yudhisthira is his great devotee, and he wants to, you know, out of respect for Maharaj Yudhisthira, he wants to save Maharaj Parikit. So he's saving Maharaj Parikit for his own qualifications as a devotee, that he will represent him. He's also saving him because of the qualifications of Maharaj Yudhisthira, you know, being a devotee. You know, it's not just because he's the last surviving male in a dynasty. The previous forefathers are also, you know, devotees of the Lord. Maharaj Yudhisthira is particularly qualified, and of course, you know, because he's an associate of Krishna. You know, that's even amongst pious devotee kings, Maharaj Yudhisthira is associating with Krishna directly, you know, associate, so that makes him quite special. And we see in listing the qualifications of Parikit Maharaj, that it describes that he has the qualities of so many wonderful people, all combined, all their qualities combined. We see that in Pariksit Maharaj, so describing him as also a very significant, great devotee of the Lord. So particularly because Maharaj Yudhisthira and Pariksit Maharaj are devotees, that the favourite of both of them is looking after them. That's you see in the Nectar Devotion in chapter 36, describes that among the Kuru dynasty, Bhishma, Pariksit Maharaj, Vidura are known as close associates of Lord Krishna. And it's amongst all the Kuru dynasty, you know, Pariksit Maharaj is selected as a very close associate. Of course, amongst those, amongst all the close associates, some of the Kuru dynasty, some of Dwarka, Uddhava is considered the best. And therefore, because he was protected, what is another name for
Vishnuratta?
Yeah, which means protected by the Lord. Yeah. Vishnuratta Chakravarti the core, just incidentally, he translated as a gift of Vishnu. Vishnuratta means a gift from Vishnu. Yeah. Alright. And of course, in that purport there, because we're describing that the Lord wants to save Maharaj Pariksit because he's a great devotee of the Lord and therefore his representative. And that helps us to understand the answer to the next question as to how does the Lord help the conditioned souls go back to Godhead? What do you do? What's that? How does the Lord help the conditioned souls go back to Godhead? Transcendental literatures,
and then by sending
missionaries of saints and sages,
and
the deputing his representative, the spiritual master. Yes, yeah, yeah. And one more thing that I found there, that the Lord always protects those, which is another way he helps the conditioned souls. He sends them, but he also protects them, and that helps the conditioned souls. And we see, you know, in certain incarnations, he saves the Vedic literatures, and he's, you know, here he saved Pariksit Maharaj. So he doesn't, he didn't send, you know, well, I've sent Pariksit Maharaj, what more do I want? Oh, he's dead. You should have looked after him. No, he protects. So that's another important point. So then it goes on to describe different qualities of Maharaj Pariksit, who he's compared to. We see that there are three Bharats mentioned. There's the brother of Lord Ram, the son of King Rishabh, and the son of Maharaj Dushyanta, who is the Bharat of the particular verse mentioned. It says, list six qualities possessed by Maharaj Pariksit and who he is compared to. Well, very easy to find six qualities. I mean, looking, it's saying verses 19 to 24. Although I don't know whether that's a misprint, whether we should go to 25 or 26. What's 26 verse 20? Because I don't know why they stopped at 24. Because
yeah. child will be the father of kings, who will be like Satan.
Yeah.
For world peace.
Yeah. Okay. So they're his activities more so than his qualities. And verse 25.
This child will be like Bali Maharaj in patience.
So there in verse 25, they still are continuing his qualities and who he's compared to. So probably just a misprint in the handbook. So it should be between 19 and 25. Yeah. And the second half of verse 25 begins to actually then describe his activities, and then verse 26 as well. So we can see he will be a great maintainer and protector of all. He will be brahminical in quality, especially the quality of being true to his promise. He will be charitable to those who take shelter of him. He will be famous and bring fame to his family. He'll be a great bowman, as irresistible as fire, as unsurpassable as the ocean, as strong as a lion, as worthy as shelter as the Himalayan mountains, forbearing like the earth and tolerant. He'll have great equanimity of mind. He'll be munificent in the resort of shelter of everyone. He'll be magnanimous and religious. He'll be patient and a staunch devotee of Lord Krishna. You only have to pick six of those to lock into your memory. But there are others there. And of course we see that he's compared to Ikshvaku, Ram, Sibi, Bharat, Arjun, lions, mountains, earth, parents, Yudhisthira, Brahma, Shiva, Narayan, Krishna, Rantidev, Yayati, Bali, Prahlad. Not very difficult. And we did discuss before the this point about the Vipra and the Brahmana. It's probably, we can go over this purport of Prabhupada just to make sure we have a clear understanding of what Prabhupada's saying there. What is the difference between a Vipra and a Brahmana? Who's going to enlighten us? None is getting their pat. It's going to be his turn. you got a tap with the pen, so it means a unanimous decision. It's your turn here.
Vipra is someone who is an intelligent person who is expert in the karma karma section of the Vedas and who deals with the different departments of knowledge. And whereas the Brahmana deals with the jnana karma section of the Vedas.
Yeah.
In an elevated Brahmana is a Vaishnava.
Yes. So Brahmana is. So there is a progression that a Vipra. Who increases in knowledge and understanding will actually become, be known more as a Brahmana. And I think we discussed that in earlier chapters. And then, or addressed as a Brahmana, Pandit. And then Brahmanas who elevate themselves above just Jnana Kanda knowledge to become an actual devotee of the Lord can then be referred to as Vaishnava Brahmanas. So, it's not that if people get stuck on a certain level, then they may be called by, Vipra Brahmana, like that. But they can be progressive, that a Vipra can become a Brahmana and then can become a Vaishnava. And in doing so, their knowledge and activities may change, from... being more interested in karma, kanda activities, to being interested in the understanding behind the karma, kanda activities. See? So, what we find, Uddhava Bhante was telling me this, that when he was in South Africa, I think that their family used to, they would get the Brahmanas to perform all sorts of ceremonies, samskaras and what have you for the family. but they never explained anything. And if you question them, they often didn't know or weren't inclined to tell you. So you would imagine that a Vipra can be a little bit like that, whereas the Brahmanas, coming to the point of Jnana Kanda, would be more inclined for their own personal understanding to understand the knowledge underlying the ceremonies, and how that knowledge purifies themselves and others. And ultimately, when that knowledge reaches perfection, they can understand that the essence of everything is pleasing the Lord, and therefore they become Vaishnavas at that. So they may perform the same ceremonies, but they may go from performing ceremonies with very little understanding and very little inclination to explain that to people, the knowledge, to distribute knowledge, and then gradually the same persons may perform the same ceremonies, but with the greater understanding and the inclination to bring the people that are doing the ceremonies for also to a point of knowledge, and then that knowledge will gradually mature to the knowledge of Vishnu, even though they may, through the whole thing, still be doing the same activities. Yeah. Although we see, you know, as a Vaishnava, it's certainly anything which is not really favourite of devotional service will be minimised, you know, or not done at all. All right, and what is the significance of the name of Parikshit Maharaj? Yes. Yeah. 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 The examiner. you ever do that when you go to a say a big festival, you know, and you go to the Hare Krishna temple. It might be a big festival. You know, so many nice devotees have come from different places, you know, the sannyasis and the gurus, and you know, you're meditating on the deities, and you know, so many things like that. And then sometimes the festival, you know, especially when they're during the day or for a couple of days, and then you might, you know, wander off to into the city. You have to do something, go to a shop, and you examine people in that light. That you know, they're just, you know, they're not devotees. I can't see Krishna. I can't see my guru. It's sort of, you know what I mean? It's like you have such a taste of such nectar from being at the temple that you begin to examine people with reference to what you've just experienced, how nice it is. so it's sort of like that. Whereas, you know, for a person who may be getting huge amounts of association away from the temple, not enough association with the temple, especially when there are nice big festivals and what have you, that sort of strong contrast may not actually fully, you know, be so apparent. All right, and that brings us to chapter 13. And there's just a couple of things we want to quickly look at. We need to understand a brief history of Vidura. You know, his history, there's actually three questions related to that history, and all right. Who can give us a nice summary of just a brief history of Vidura, and in their brief history to simultaneously answer those three questions that are asked in relationship to that? Bailey? Basaday? Did you get a tap? No. Zero. Do you want to do it? There you go. No. That's right. Yes. Yeah, chapter 13, there's three questions specifically relating to this history. If I ask the questions, I'll sort of give it away a little bit, but yeah. Go on. Yeah. Nice and loud. Yep. Oh, you just... you're reading... no, no, Kaiser, no. Yeah, the closed book. Yeah. No. Who would like to do that? The ladies? He's the son of a maidservant or a Sudrani, which would make him, if he's the son of a Sudrani, he would be a... What's that? What Brahmana Chatri Vaishya Sudra? Sudra, yeah, okay. So by, you know, yeah, by birth, not by qualification. Yeah. Yes, he was Maharaj Dhritarashtra's advisor, yes. Yes, there were certain incidences. Keeping the history more related to his appearance here. Yes, yeah, yes, yeah.
He left the palace after he realized he can't influence Maharaj Dhritarashtra anymore. Just before the war, he realized he doesn't want to take part anymore and they abandoned him. But then he said this is a good excuse for me to leave.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, he took that opportunity. He was offended by both Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. Took the opportunity. He didn't really want to take part, and that gave him the out that he needed. Yeah. Still, you know, related to his birth. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Bhaktisara is saying he is actually Yamaraj, and he was cursed by Manduka Muni. Why?
Why he was cursed? But he was very eager to come.
He was, yes, this is a good point, very eager to come.
Because Yamaraj is always engaged in punishing people.
Yes. Why would he want to come and preach? Why would he feel that he had a mandate to preach?
Because he wanted to
He's one of the Mahajans here. So as a Mahajan, we can imagine that he has, you know, vast amounts of knowledge in the science of bhakti. So, you know, to be able to not utilize that and just be doing the daily grind, they're grinding their bones and their blood. So the daily grind would take on a slightly different connotation, you know, wouldn't it? Yeah, so who can say why he was cursed by Manduk and Muni? Pierced an ant, the abdomen,
the rectum.
Yes, yeah, with a thorn, or yeah. And because of that, he was taken to. What happened was, who did it? Who pierced the ant? Manduka Muni, yes. Yeah. When he was a little 5-year-old boy, yeah, he pierced the ant. He went to Yamaraj.
So he was meditating.
Yes.
And then a thief obviously went in and his heart.
Yes.
And then he was convicted. He was very close. He was convicted as a conspirator.
Right.
And was very close to be.
Oh, were they impaled?
Yeah.
Impaled.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So he was very close to be either killed or
yes,
and went through a great deal of anxiety.
So they were punishing by, you know, they had like swords,
yeah,
hanging on the ground, and then throw them on top of them.
Right. I thought they were going to impale him where it goes up through the anus and out through the head.
Yeah.
Big lance. There's a Shaka Zulu. There was an African warlord who used to do that by the thousands. Even recently, yes.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Their body weight is just gradually pulling them down onto this stake, which is going up through their anus and basically out through the back of their head. It's a very slow, painful, one of the worst ways that you could possibly die. Yeah. So he was going to be punished along with the thieves in that way. All right. So then what happened?
Then he demanded. He demanded for that, you know, he was innocent. And
yes.
He demanded explanation for.
When the king found out
he was a sage.
The king
stopped that.
He stopped that. Yeah.
Then he brought it down.
Yes.
And then he demanded why.
And then what happened?
Then he went to.
He went to actually see Yamaraj and asked him why he put him in such a situation, and Yamaraj reminded him that in his childhood he had pierced an ant through the rectum, and he considered that was excessive. You know, Yamaraj's intelligence had failed him, you know, for such an innocent child to be punished so severely. But, you know, what I find interesting about this is that in this section here, I think the last part of chapter 12, Maharaj Yudhisthira performs three Ashmaveda yajnas, horse sacrifices, that's called. That's a lot easier. And he did that because he was so fearful of, you know, being touched by the sinful reaction, because, you know, millions and millions of people were killed, you know, and some of them superior and respectable persons. So here we see, you know, why Maharaj Yudhisthira should be so concerned that, you know, how strict are the laws of the material energy that Manduka Muni pierced one ant. And he's getting this reaction. So you can see the, you know, Maharaj Yudhisthira, so much suffering, and you know why he was so fearful. So it's a nice connection within the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. So then he cursed Yamaraj, and he took birth as a Sudra. And of course, that was in one sense Krishna's arrangement, because Yamaraj wanted to preach, and therefore Krishna gave him that arrangement, and he took birth. And so who took over when Yamaraj came down as Vidura? Who took over? Hariyama. Yeah. And who was Hariyama? One of the sons of Aditi, was it? Was it, what did they, forget their name. What's that? Yes. Describes in verse 15 that Aryama was one of the many sons of Kashyapa and Aditi. They were called the Adichas. Aryama was one of the 12 Adichas. So a very, very elevated personality. Mm. Alright, just one last thing. Let us have a look at just a quick evaluation. We don't have to go through all the verses, but in Vidura's discussion with the Pandavas, you see in verses 12 and 13, he did not disclose the unpalatable, he did not speak unpalatably, although it was truth, that the Yadu dynasty had been annihilated. But when he spoke with Dhritarashtra, he spoke quite sharply, you know, to awaken him, and that, so he then did speak the truth, yet it didn't seem to be as palatable. So let's evaluate the principle of speaking truth, because he's actually applied it completely differently in two different sets of circumstances. Would we not apply the same principle that as it describes in verse 13 in the purport, that one should not, according to the Niti Shastra, one should not speak an unpalatable truth to cause distress to others? It comes of its own accord. But he applied that with Yudhisthira Maharaj and the Pandavas, but didn't apply, it appears that he didn't apply it with Dhritarashtra. So, you know, what principle can we draw from that? It's a very important point, because you see in some of Prabhupada's letters that Prabhupada in his books, he may speak about Vallabha Acharya, who has, you know, a Sampradaya, and some persons from that Sampradaya sometimes were may have run into some Prabhupada's disciples, spoken about Vallabha Acharya, and they were speaking what's in Prabhupada's books, and they become offended, you know, what you're saying about our guru. And then they write to Prabhupada, you know, what is this? You know, truth should be spoken palatably with your, you know, your disciple. Prabhupada said, yes, you know, in social dealings, in social interactions, we apply that, you know. You know, in the general course of our interactions. But when it comes to preaching Krishna consciousness and delivering the conditioned souls, it's not necessary that that's actually applied and the truth must be stated. So, you know, it's very similar to here that, you know, in the social interaction with Yudhisthira and the others, he didn't need to preach to them or to convince them of any particular point for their own benefit. Whereas with Dhritarashtra, it was imperative that he be convinced. So, you know, when that imperative is there, that the preaching must be said, then even if the truth is not palatable, it can be stated. But even then, you know, even in presenting that, we still follow the mood of Pravadananda Swami, you know, where we devotees approach someone, they may flatter them a little and offer, present themselves as very humble before such an exalted person, and then, you know, gradually come to the point that, you know, you are very so knowledgeable and you're so qualified that you know, whatever you have learnt in your great vast, you know, studies, you forget all of that and you just take up Krishna consciousness. So it's a very polite way of saying that everything you know is useless, it has no value. Basically, you're a fool. Fool number one. You know, but it's in a very roundabout way. So it's very palatable. Very palatable way of saying you're a fool, and your knowledge has no value, and simply makes you look like an ass. That's what they're actually saying. But by way of, you know, in a very palatable way. So we sort of we follow that, but. You know, when it comes to if someone then will challenge some of the points of discussion, then the devotee will present the truth. You know, that you challenge that the living entity should be the eternal servant of God. So they will speak, no, you know, the truth, even though it's unpalatable. No, I want to hear that I am God. So, you know, both are there to a certain degree. But sometimes you will see that devotees will take that statement that truth should be spoken palatably, they'll take that too far to the point of compromising preaching. Right? So that's a danger. And therefore, our Bhakti Bhavata students will quickly go to this section in the Srimad Bhagavatam and quickly defeat that with the example of Dhritarashtra and Vidura. Or sometimes devotees will go the other way and they will not speak the truth palatably when they're preaching, and then, you know, so actually both have to be there and applied very, very carefully. You know, a devotee has to know how to utilize that. It's not something which is just a hard and fast rule. Truth is spoken palatably. It's applied in some circumstances and not in others. That's the point. And that's what we see from Vidura. Perfectly applying that. So then you can just, you know, go through. You've probably already gone through that section many times and just have a look at all the details of how he's done that. Alright, so next week we will
so in that case also relation and age is also is a factor, isn't it?
Yes, I'll let you go through the details of it. Yeah. In the verses, have a closer look at that, but for your understanding, I just want someone's going to come in that door in a minute. We're all going to have to leave very quickly. Alright. So, let me just say that for next week, finish chapter 13, of course. And having done that, we will then have a brief review. It won't have to be too extensive because we have covered a lot of the questions as we've gone, and we have covered the open book questions. I think we've got one more to go, or one or two, next week. So if there's anything in particular that you don't understand, keeping in mind that next week is the last opportunity to ask or discuss, then bring it up next week. Because the following week, we'd like to have the exam. Right? So, go through, your questions, read the rest of the chapter, go through your questions, make sure you do have a good understanding, because we have covered them. Listen to the lectures if you get a chance. Start looking at your essays. At least, get a bit of a plan, and once you do that, you'll see, just something's not quite gelling. If there's something that you don't understand, let's discuss it next week. I won't be going through everything like I did last time. We'll have a brief summary, but I'll be hoping that there's some specific things that you need to ask me, and we'll concentrate on them. And then the week after that, there'll be an exam. Alright? That's about it. Yeah, just keep in mind, each unit we want to write about 1,000 words. So, just there are a few little editing things that they haven't quite done the maths always, in there. But that's the principle we're working on. So just roughly about 250 per question. If there's four, if there's three questions, about 350 per question, like that. You just do that for each unit. Yeah, just always work towards a 1,000 words. Yeah. All right, that's about it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hello. Yes, speaking. Yes, 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 we can do that. Yeah. 7th of November. Now, can I get you to call me back a little after 7, because then I will actually have my diary with me. Yeah? Yes, after 7 tonight. That'd be good. Thank you.